stories from around the corner.
And around the country.
You're listening to All the Best.
Proudly supported by the Art Gallery of New South Wales.
Before we get into this week's stories, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge that I'm recording from stolen Gadigal land and pay my respect to Gadigal elders past and present, and also recognise that the area where FBI Radio is situated, Redfern, has long been a place of storytelling, strength, resistance and resilience for First Nations communities. You're listening to All the Best from FBI Radio 94.5. I'm Madhura Prakash. This week we're sharing words from two Turkish-Australian writers who ruminate on the topic of belonging, home and immigration. First, we have a spoken word poem by writer Ella Pinar as she tells the story of her journey to Turkey, a place she does and doesn't call home.
In this version of home, dinner is ready and the men eat first. The kids, then the women. I wonder why the order is all wrong. My cousin reminds me of my promise. We sit under the garden light we eat meals under. Men still in their dinner seats, the women filling the gaps. Without them, the family would be empty space. The children are naming a stray kitten, feeding it meat from dinner plates. Cheetah is what sticks. He sits down on a small bench his dada made just the week before. I wonder if once it was an ironing board, in preparation for this house to be filled with more people than there are seats, more children than there are beds. The night, warm and comfortable, loosely long red dress, embroidery wrapped around my neck, sleeves and flowing down the middle. A specific style, request put in days prior. I brush his curls and he knows exactly how to tilt his head. A routine for every weekend. In this version of home, chai is brewing on a table next to us. The women setting the glasses and baklava. I split his hair down the middle. Make do without any products. He knows if he wants his birthday braids to stay, I have to do it tight. Never fazed by the grip or flinches at the tug, I tell him, I'm sorry if it hurts. Anyway. Bugs dancing desperately into the light, a beautiful routine above our heads. We are weaving through the years, one decade and 4 days lie between us. But moments like now, we're not too far away. In this version of home, the glimpse of a minuscule memory just arrived, yearning in the land that held my parents' first breath, overwhelmed by love and generosity I have never met before, relatives almost never heard of. We arrived at their apartment. We grab our suitcases from the car and carry them up the stairs. I remember my taser made us a cake, blue and white icing, a little welcome to our home. I'm not sure what about seeing that cake made me feel so special. I just imagine the time she put into it, going to the market to purchase ingredients, deciding on what flavour, roll the icing, create little stars and circles with little roses on top. One of their many, many kindnesses, but I held on to this one. My other taser asked Annene what foods we liked. Jade loves yurtlu çorbası. Almost every time we visit Annene, yurtlu çorbası is sitting on the stove slightly too hot, ready for us to eat. The first meal we ate in Ankara was exactly that. Your Annene told me you liked it. Sitting on the stove, we left Annene in Sydney, and when we arrived in Ankara, she was there again in different form. These small amounts stay with me. A missing ingredient. I want life to be filled with moments like this. I know I don't need to cross borders to find this feeling or spend huge amounts of money. I can simply find moments like this in our everyday. When you realize that love is all around us, life feels like many fragments of seeing that cake or that torba in that small apartment in Ankara. In this version of Home, the cousins never spent so much time outside, on the paved road, sitting, hide and seek with the sun, not so patiently waiting for their turn on the scooter and bike. There are fights over nothing, and I am part peacekeeper, part translator, a bleeding dictionary. Turkish is in our blood, but it never felt so distant. I wonder why Turkish is in our blood, but not on our tongue. It is the sun's turn to hide when I ask why the women are preparing dinner and the men wait. That's just how it is. In this version of Home, streets are dim, and we thank the full moon and absent streetlights, dodging potholes and cats and making last-minute turns, directed by my cousin, resident local and GPS. I'm in the middle, checking the next song on cue, holding onto the car seats in front and slamming my imaginary backseat brakes. Look at the moon. Our bellies are full from late-night durums after unsuccessfully locating a chortbaca. We're taking blurry photos of the moon, and all I can think about is finally getting home and washing this heat off me. They drop us off and we walk up the stairs, adding our shoes to the 18 other pairs outside the front door, looking like the outside of a mosque right before prayer. In this version of Home, I let him open the door because I still haven't learnt the trick to it. We tiptoe through the house. I hear an auntie whisper something on the mattress on the floor. I get to the bathroom, and until this moment, I never thought I would be so excited to bathe myself with a bucket. After subtly proving myself through our recent car rides, I am honoured. My cousins and his friends pronounce me DJ of the day. We arrive at the boat, ready for a long day of island and beach hopping. See that island in the distance? That's Greece. My jaw drops. Sometimes I forget you see other countries from here, whether it be across waters or imaginary borders. We bring a small piece of two continents. I plug my phone in, connecting to the crackling speaker. Years of listening to my parents' old Turkish CDs in the car, discovering new pop, borrowing Turkish rap from Teaser has prepared me for this very moment. I hit shuffle and in my playlist, I trust. I mispronounce the lyrics to my favourite songs and mumble the curse words. I mimic my relatives and take note of their slang. I borrow pieces from characters I watch from my favourite dramas and analyse how close it is to reality. I missed the Saturday Turkish school experience growing up. My broken tongue is built from my favourite songs, fictional characters, and our everyday conversations at home. Teachings are everywhere if you just take a moment to listen. In this version of Home, when one passes, the whole neighbourhood is made aware. A reminder that we meet our Creator at any time. A reminder to pray for the one who finally has. Someone died, he explains as the janazah prayer calls from the mosque. Embarrassed for not knowing myself. For not giving enough attention. I just met this little boy a few days ago, and I find myself inspired by his spirit. His mind protects 5 languages, and I wonder which one he thinks in. I imagine what it would be like to say, I love you 5 ways, when 1, 2 does not feel enough. It takes seconds for him to transition from Turkish to English, English to Turkish throughout a few days together. I just wish I could seamlessly do the same. I'm a little more than double his age, and he does not understand why my mother tongue is something I cannot fully grasp, and I am left questioning the same thing. In this version of Home, we walk the beachside night markets. Two Enişte's sitting on a small table, a much smaller setup than everyone else around them. They have a few stacks, books with a paper sign, Şiir, in big letters. Şiir ne demek? What's Şiir mean? I ask my cousin. He looks at me shocked, as if thinking, out of all the Turkish you know, you don't know this one word. It's what you write, he says, not knowing how else to explain it. I think for a moment, puzzled. After some back and forth, Jeton düştü, it finally clicks. How had I never known the word for poetry until now? I'm so fascinated and hugely inspired by these local uncles self-publishing their poetry, and Baba doesn't let me purchase it. You won't even be able to read most of it. I know he's right, but it still sucks. I'm always so quick to support and read small poets, hoping one day they go big. But I've never come across something I've wanted to read and physically couldn't. What did they write about? What was their story? What were their names? Who inspires them? I pull out my imaginary notepad and immediately add this to the mental list of reasons for why I have to fluently learn my mother tongue. In this version of Home, I wanted to give them a microphone, place them on the seaside with a stand, their book in hand, flip their woolen flat cap on the ground, and silence the crowds giving no attention to them. Make a pop-up poetry slam on the shores of this small city. Let them project the words of these pages. We keep walking, and I wish I could give them a platform to share their story, a safe space to be heard, as has been done for me on the other side of the world. To reach this version of Home, we took all types of transport along the way. Flew in planes, rode in overflowing cars, tour buses, minivans, bicycles and boats of all types. I even jumped from a cliff with a parachute. There's absolutely no time to panic. Your destiny lies between the strength of this one wind. I am running until I can no longer feel the surface beneath my feet. I'm at eye level with the mountains. The water is all shades of blue, and I can see out into the horizon. The town lies beneath my feet, and boats look like the toys babies have in bathtubs. In that moment, everything feels still. It's funny to think that being in the middle of the most dangerous activities makes me feel the most at peace. Nothing better than being two clips away from death to make you feel alive. Life looked small from the sky. Life starts to feel surreal when you're 2 kilometers above the ground you walk, and you're only attached with 2 clips and a parachute. We got to a point where the tiny people weren't so tiny anymore. There was a hotel pool with a bunch of people swimming and surrounding it. I wave, and in that moment, just by chance, someone looks up and waves back. I wonder how many people saw me as a floating dot in the sky and nothing more. Because I guess in that moment, that's all I was. Just like they were for me. I always tell myself to look for new views and perspectives, but from now on, I will continue to remind myself that I can always try to see what it looks like from a bird's eye view, but I will never truly know what it's like to be a bird. In this version of Home, we've arrived back in our city, left the homelands across the other side of the world. I slept at 5:45. Even my body refuses to believe I've left Turkey. I'm not ready to break the news about time zones to my body and why it's dark in times it should be day. I wonder what my body would say about the map, why it even takes my finger to leap from here to there. It doesn't know any better. It doesn't understand why the sun is hiding from us, why our body is no longer consuming our traditional food daily. My stomach is angry at my new diet, growls at me for not listening. Why are we not walking around all day and all night long? Where did everyone go? When will we see them again? Why am I so cold? Why are we not skipping through the warmth and burning heat?
Put your seatbelts on. Seatbelts on.
I think deep down it knows things will be different
Bye.
Now. How can my body be homesick for a land that was never truly home to begin with?
Bro, we'll make everyone be able to come back here again.
I feel like no one comes back here.
In this version of homesickness, I am still in search of the places I feel safe. I know there should be more somewhere. I mark a star on my map each time I discover some place new. My mum says I should learn the roads, says I shouldn't rely on maps or stars. If you know the main roads, you can get almost anywhere in this city. I've gotten lost before, many times. I had to pull over, focus on my breathing, and mum is telling me it's okay through a Bluetooth phone call. Sometimes I don't tell her about the wrong turns until she asks. She tells me it's normal to find myself in unfamiliar towns, cruising through unwanted highways that took too long under construction anyway. These roads don't look familiar, but I noticed that they don't scare me anymore. I have too much trust in the compass on my map, on which I try to turn to every day, on which I try to plant my head wherever I am. I hope by the end, my map will look like the sky on a clear night. I click the heels of my sneakers together three times. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. And I wonder where it'll take me. I wonder where I'll decide home is today. In every version of home, I think I write about my heritage and country because it's my way of trying to learn more. I'm trying to reach something I always thought was too far. I think I write about my family and culture because it's my only way of feeling like I come from something, belong to something. I think I write about the stories because I'm scared of forgetting. I think that if it is written, perhaps I can't forget. Perhaps it will stay with us forever. I don't know why I'm so worried about the world not knowing the stories. Even if the world is just one reader, years after I have passed, flicking through my dusty journals and loose leaf sheets, a time capsule, breathing new air for the first time. Perhaps we will meet there. Perhaps their ancestors will come alive in that moment, and perhaps that's enough. Perhaps I won't need to carry these mountains and oceans and roots in every version of home. Perhaps I'll allow this tree to stand alone.
That poem was written and recited by Ella Pinar, with sound design by Ramon Bryant. The supervising producer was Phoebe Adler-Ryan. Up next, I have a conversation with award-winning essayist and scholar Edda Gunaydin to explore her understanding of these themes of kinship and nostalgia for a place that we sometimes call home. To start off, here's Edda reading a section of her 2022 book, Root and Branch.
Migration is a trauma. It generates an implacable sense of distance between oneself and everyone else. An estrangement that tells you that you could not possibly be like others, relate to others, or be present where you are. I am trying to fiddle with a new definition of home, with the idea that it is not the same as a homeland.
There's a phrase that you use as a motherland, as a repository of authenticity, like this idea that we're like, that is the, you know, the epitome, that is where we're seeking, you know, whatever we get from that in every day. But then, yeah, obviously it doesn't always live up to what we dream it to be.
I think that is what is nice about Ella's kind of story. There are so many moments of joy that come from seeing kind of like familial connections or neighborhoods that are important to people that you know, or experiencing a language being spoken as the main language rather than the kind of othered language. All of that is so significant, and you know, like I love Turkish music so much, and it's not simply a case of saying, well, get over it. But yeah, I think that putting down some of the maybe the fantasies becomes important. Like one of those fantasies is that, yeah, the motherland is the site of authenticity, and what I'm doing here is kind of like fake and not real, and I'm not real and I'm not living a real life, and everything I do is in some way fraudulent, whether that be because I speak with an accent or whatever. Like I think all of that ends up again in this deficit-oriented place, rather than focusing on the productivity that also happens here, such as the fact that there is so much being art being produced by like first and second gen migrants. And so, yeah, I think like putting away the yearning can be important for, yeah, kind of experiencing a more fulsome, well, even just experiencing your own culture more authentically, ultimately.
Maybe putting away that yearning kind of so you can live your life in the everyday, but then also so you can enjoy if you do go back to whatever your homeland is, or wherever your wherever the people are who you feel like are your people, you don't put unfair expectations onto that as well.
I think that that concept of homeland is ultimately, yeah, a little, it feels a little mythic to me. I don't think any of us can ever find our true homeland or whatever.
I like that idea of I guess rather than, yearning for something that isn't quite what we, isn't realistically what, you know, what we're hoping for it to be, but like acknowledging that there is like beauty in like what we have.
Yeah.
And putting time and love into our community that gives us a lot of their time and love as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that, I think, is the thread for me of like what reconciles, you know, kind of like bodily trauma and my migratory trauma. Like the answer is often being present and creating connections.
Definitely, yeah. What do you feel like is home to you?
I guess like part of the conception of Root and Branch was trying to come up with a satisfactory answer to that, rather than just sitting in that place of deficit and grief, which undoubtedly kind of scores the diasporic experience, right? But I think sometimes for me has felt like it kind of veered on the edge of like self-pity or something, where it's like, what if we came up with an answer to that question that was less like weakness deficit kind of oriented and was more like strengths-based, without blindly embracing nationalism and being like, Aussie, oi, I love Lamingtons, blah. Taking it as possible that one can find a home, I think, was important to me, even if we are kind of a little culturally displaced. Especially because, like, when you live in a settler colony, like, pretty much everyone here, barring a small number of the population, are kind of not from here, right? So, you know, this idea of the exceptionalism of the diasporic experience falls apart when you unpick that as well a little bit. Although, you know, to differing degrees, some of us have chosen to be here more than others. And yeah, displacement is sometimes foisted upon you rather than chosen. One of the key themes of the book is that your body is your home. If like migration is a trauma, it's just but one of many. And so, you know, the book kind of considers the other traumas that inflect our lives and that require us to be able to reconcile living inside of our own body homes, if you like. So, yeah, I think getting good with oneself and one's own body, I think, is a way of experiencing feeling homed regardless of where you are in the world. And then I guess my second answer to what feels like home, it's like the kind of radically local stuff that also makes for like interesting writing. The places I've been in my life and the people I've known in those places, I think to me are home or more homey, home-like. One of the songs I was listening to a lot as I was just finishing Rooted Branch was a song called Working for the Knife. Mitski sings like, when you think the day is done, there's another day to come. And then she also kind of talks about like when she was 20, she kind of thought that she would be done, but you know, now she's 30, the road ahead still appears the same. Like it's all through her music, this idea that you were forced to refresh and renew yourself and that you are simply never done. Like life demands that you keep going and that new obstacles come up and new questions start to play on your mind. And even though you think like, oh, cool, that one's done and dusted, it possibly ends like reintroduces itself with just like a slightly different kind of shade to it, but still ultimately I think we're all questing for home and the mythic, like the kind of illusion of fulfillment. But that's, I guess, part of the artistic process, or at least it is for Mitski, so I'm assuming it is for me as well.
Is there anything new and exciting you have in the pipeline?
I'm working on my second collection of essays that will be called This Is Where I Leave You, Essays on Collapse, maybe. I think the past 4 years of crisis, like poly crisis, have forced us to, well, pretty much the Mitski thing that I've already talked about, like that we've been forced to invent new ways of doing kind of like community and sociality, if you like. Or at least I have, like, as I was just finishing Rooted Branch, I kind of, like, went through this significant breakup with a partner, like, 8 years. And then, yeah, I have reinvented my life. I'm now, you know, in a happy relationship with my girlfriend. And that's, like, demanded a lot of, like, attention to my relationship with sexuality. And life has been really hard. Well, very bland observation, but life has been quite challenging for many of us for the past 4 years. So a very poorly explained take on the new book, but those are the kind of things.
I'm still excited. What you're saying is the new book's going to be gay.
It's going to be gayer than ever. That's right.
Edda's back and she's gayer than ever.
That's right, yeah. Part of it, the book will be about being what is called on Reddit a late bloomer lesbian. So look out for it, but long pipeline.
Long, long pipeline. Yeah, very good. We're keen.
Thanks so much to Edda Gunaydin for speaking to me. You can find her work in the Sydney Review of Books, The Age, Minjin, and many other places. Her book, Root and Branch, Essays on Inheritance, is an incredible read that I really recommend you get your hands on, pretty much wherever you usually buy books. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past and present. All the Best is made at FBI Radio on Gadigal land, in association with SYN and 3RRR, on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung lands, and ACCC on Arunde and Warramungu lands. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork.
We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and were made possible by the Art Gallery of New South Wales and the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find our full archive of more than 500 episodes at allthebestradio.com. I'm Madhura Prakash. Thanks for listening.